Elizabeth Barrett is a wife, mother, grandmother, licensed marriage and family therapist, educator, eavesdropper, and emotion worker. She uses all of these skills to address the subjects we all struggle with in this conversation with the Reluctant Therapist. Happy Tuesday, Elizabeth.
Happy Tuesday. I am really looking forward to today's conversation. I'm not even going to do a lot of preamble to the conversation. But today I have two guests in the studio, Chris Burkhart and his wife, Brianne Burkhart. And this is a conversation that has been long in the making because I've had them both on the show at different times talking about their interests. Chris talking about his life as a professional photographer and author and world traveler. And Brianne is with her work as an equine therapy and also as a mom. She's one of my favorite mom guests and her experience raising her two boys. But over the course of our conversations, and of course, having known the two of them for a very long time, what always comes up after the program is the questions they get when they're out in the world or in company or when Chris is traveling and doing public relations work, the questions of how do you make a marriage work? How do you do this with two young sons? How do you keep your marriage thriving and together? And how do you balance, if there is balance, both of your personal time, if you have any, on top of trying to keep the kids healthy and keep the career going? So we always have this conversation after we're on the air, and we decided that we, instead of trying to have it individually, that it'd be best to come together and have both of you in the studio to talk about this experience and also to hopefully field some of the questions that seem to come in from your followers on different social media platforms or when you're out doing different events or just in the community when people are outside the relationship looking in and partially wanting to hate you for everything that you look like you have going and then partially hoping that it all is failing because you couldn't possibly have it all. Mm. We're going to answer those questions as well.
The illusion of perfection is very real. It's definitely an illusion at times. We have worked hard to try and figure it out. And I think that just as a caveat to this whole experience, you know, we, Bree and I just want people who listen to this to take it with a grain of salt, because this is really just the world according to Bree and Chris and what's worked for us. That's all we can really share. We're not here to give advice or solve people's problems. We're just here to say, these are the struggles we've dealt with. This is what our life looks like, and it will change. And we're open to feedback and criticism and ways in which we can maybe do it better. And really, that's why we're here with you, because we respect you as a therapist. You're not our therapist, but you are a therapist, and you're somebody who's given me personally and Bree, incredible advice over the years. So we're just super grateful to be here. And this is, again, as you mentioned super eloquently, the byproduct of questions that we've both received, Bree, all the time as well, like DMs from like moms or wives out there or girlfriends or husbands asking how to handle this. How do you manage when the significant other is traveling or long distance or on the road? And so, that's why we're here. We're excited to do this.
Well, and I think one of the reasons I agreed to do this as well is to normalize your relationship and try to take it off the pedestal a little bit, because I think there is this danger in high-profile couples making it look like it all is easier, making it look like it works. And then for everyone else, it actually destabilizes their lives because you think, why can't we do that? And
there was danger in comparison.
Exactly. And I remember seeing a photo of Chrissy Teigen, who's married to John Legend, around Christmas time. And it was a photo of them and their children, but then all of the people who make it work for them. And I really appreciated her honesty in saying, you know, we make it look like this, but this is why it all works. And so that was another piece for putting this show together today. And for those of you who don't know Chris Burkhart, I'm going to talk a little bit about who he is and why you found yourself in this
awkward
position.
Introduction.
I like the awkward introduction. Right, but I'm going to make it more painful and long just so you have to be uncomfortable. because I think in order for this conversation to make any sense, I think people who don't know you need to understand that you have found yourself in this position of having a lot of recognition or a lot of acclaim, won a lot of awards that have lifted you to kind of a public status. And So Chris Burkhart, for the last decade, worked to build a reputation as a business owner, as an author, as a photographer. You've also built a brand that is recognized around the world. And starting out as a surf photographer, traveling the state of California looking for that perfect wave, which turned into your first book, The California Project. And now following, there's been five more books over the course of the last decade. You've worked as senior staff photographer for Surfline and for Surfer Magazine, and you've done print ads and commercials for everything from Range Rover to Toyota. You yourself, you and Bree, have been featured in Sunset Magazine, which was adorable. You have done films and documentaries, most currently the award-winning Under the Arctic Sky. Mm-hmm. That you still are kind of out promoting.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah.
You have the Burkhart brand and a studio or gallery in Pismo Beach. You sell your photographs around the world. You travel around the world giving photography classes and giving talks on corporate stages. Mm-hmm. You've done a TED Talk, which is kind of where we first really connected.
Yeah.
And so all of this, and you have over a million followers on Instagram. And so for the people in the social media world, that gives you celebrity status right there.
Yeah.
Don't interrupt me.
I'm not going to. Okay. I'm trying to like find a way to.
He's trying to make me stop.
I'm trying to find a way to be like, okay, turn the attention somewhere else.
No, because this has been over a decade of your life. And again, started as a kid who wanted to travel and see the world. Mm-hmm. And it has blossomed or grown into this huge brand that's almost bigger than you yourself at this point.
Yeah.
But at the same time, through the course of this same decade, you married your high school sweetheart, Brianne, and you have created a life and a family and a home with your two sons, Forrest and Jeremiah, who are 7 and 5 at this point. And Brianne has also, I guess together you've worked to create the Burkhart family farm, I don't even know what else to call it, with your menagerie of llamas and
alpacas.
Thank you, alpacas.
Yes.
Chickens.
Yes.
And a dog
that
Chris was not excited about.
Two horses.
Mm. And
we had a few other animals, but they all.
They kind of come and go
in
the family process. And so, with the weight of these almost two conflicting experiences, the persona that is Chris Burkhart and Chris Burkhart, husband and father, and then for Bree to have married this person who is your high school sweetheart, who said, hey, I have this good idea. I think I'll take photographs of surfing in remote places or wild places, and that's how I'll make my living. And you said, sure, honey, I'm all in. Let's make a life.
I mean, it wasn't quite
it
that
was
beautiful.
Just like that.
And then here we are 10 years later. So clearly there is a lot of story that has happened underneath. Mm-hmm. So let's start with the love story.
I just want to hear Bree's radio voice.
Okay,
because it's amazing.
You know that I've said that.
It's really good.
It's the best. So Bree, then I'll let you tell the love story. Then I always like to ask the guys love story because it's humorous. But let's let you tell the true story. The love story
the
of Chris
story.
And Bree.
So basically, we grew up in the same town. We went to the same high school. And the first time I ever saw Chris, he didn't know I existed, but I saw him, and at the after school program, he was in the pool and I was like, that guy, he is so cute.
Really?
I want to date him. And that was freshman year. I didn't know any better. And, after a few years of circling in the same groups, certain things kept bringing us back together and it was kind of like a magnet. He always was someone that I was drawn to and vice versa. And we ended up dating end of sophomore year, beginning of junior year. And it was not an easy process. When you find someone, you feel that deeply for them at a young age.
Yes.
It's very real feelings and very real life experiences that are challenging. And so we navigated a high school relationship from differing backgrounds, differing faiths.
But now you're talking about it from your 33-year-old perspective. I want the love story from the 16-year-old's perspective.
I was head over heels for
him. That's where we were.
He roped me in, and it wasn't very hard because I just always saw him and wanted him. And he was magnetic and charming and funny.
So there was the humor.
I think your perspective is so different.
What was yours? What were you seeing?
Well, I think that Bree, I mean, to be transparent, Bree was in a different class than I was. And I mean that like financially and just like she was smart and she was intelligent and she was, you know, beyond just being really pretty. She was this girl who had like a lot going for her. And I think that I honestly was maybe the first relationship that I was in where I was like, I don't want to ruin this. I don't want to screw this up.
Because, yeah, so there's a sense that this was special.
Yeah, and sounds so stupid. From the very beginning, I was like, this is somebody I could see myself marrying. Like, this is someone important. And there's this, like, funny joke where Bree was like, I had seen her at a high school football game. And she was like, I was like, I really want to hang out and blah, 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 you know. And I think I might have been slightly high, but
let's be transparent.
Let's be honest here.
This is what we're here to do.
And I was like, and she's like, I'm not going to date you. She's like, if you still remember this conversation in the morning, and you don't have a girlfriend anymore, then we can talk. And I remember like went home, basically like broke up with the girl that I was dating at the
time.
Immediately called Bree right back. I'm like, I'm single. And yes, can you come? And it was so funny because normally when you're in high school, you're kind of like trying to. At least for me, like I have a pretty close relationship with my mom, my dad, a stepdad, who's my dad, but like my parents were, their opinion mattered. Mm-hmm. And I didn't bring many girls home to meet the parents, but Bree was like, the very first time we hung out, I was like, I want she to meet my parents.
Because our first date.
Because I was
really?
Proud.
Yeah. I was like, wow.
I was proud
okay.
of her. I was
like, you were reaching above the rim, basically.
Yeah. I was like, look who I brought home. and so, yeah, I think Bree mentioned this. Like, we dealt with our own high school, you know, early college day woes. And that was really challenging. And to be honest, like, I wasn't a photographer. I was, you know, I did
You're
a little.
You're a kid.
I did
he wanted
a little
bit to be
art.
A mechanic.
Yeah, and Bree was all in. It was like, hey, I'm going to be – like that was my career path. And yeah. You have to keep in mind that's kind of what I meant by like the class difference. Like her dad and worked at Diablo Canyon and was this total, you know, badass like engineer. And I was just like, yeah, I'm going to be a mechanic. I'm going to go to Wyotech and this is it. And my senior year of high school, I really started ditching class to go surfing. And I found my way within this kind of wily group of bodyboarders and surfers shooting photos, and really like that became my way to express myself was photography. And the very first camera I ever picked up was a camera that Bree's mom had. It was an old hippie strap Nikon. I ran a couple rolls of film through it, and I still have the very, very first photos I ever took.
Our first selfies.
Yeah, it was classic. Like, you know, like
we need to put them up with
10-second timer looking at us. And it's amazing because Bree has been there through the whole experience of this career from like the stage of total insecurity, discovery, mm-hmm. to now success, whatever you want to call it. And we've really seen, I think, the best and the very, very worst in each other. And the one thing I would just add to this podcast is that the one thing I think both of us have realized is that we live by choice a very introspective life. Like, it's never too late to be like, hey, let's take 5 steps backwards, see where we went wrong in order to take 100 steps forwards. Like,
but were you doing that at 17 and 18?
Yes, actually.
We kind of
because
were, yeah.
I felt similarly for him that he was what I wanted. And no matter who else I met or saw along the way, I never got pulled from who he was. I felt like I was meant to be with him. It's so cheesy. But that doesn't mean it wasn't super challenging. And
we
fought for each other
yeah.
from the age of 16 on. We really yeah. fought for each other to keep coming back together. And I'll say that the turning point for me, realizing that we could have a healthy, potentially healthy relationship, because it wasn't healthy back right. in the day, was we got back together after a breakup. And we were 19
one
at the time. One of the few. back
or
in
many.
The day. back in 19. And he came to me and he's like, I want to be with you. Let's go to counseling. And I was, yeah. we were 19, and I was like, if there is a 19-year-old boy who's willing to go to counseling with me and make a relationship work, I could marry that person yeah. because he's going to fight for me. And we've talked about this. Like,
We talked about this last night.
I don't believe that there is one soulmate for you in the world. There yeah. are plenty of people that can make you happy and fulfilled and you could have adventures with.
Right.
It's a matter yeah. of me choosing him choosing me, and us continuing to choose each other.
Yeah, agreed.
That has made this relationship yeah. what
and
it
I
is.
I think any relationship can work if you're willing to fight for each other. And to me, I was at least commitment is the number one core baseline. I was talking to Bree about this last night, and I really thought kind of deeply about like you can have exes. Ex-husbands, ex-wives, ex-girlfriends, ex-boyfriends, whatever, that you still love. Mm-hmm. You can still love that person no matter how deeply they hurt you. Love is unconditional. trust is earned, respect is earned, and I would add to that passion is earned. And I think that passion is the thing that does draw you together. Mm. It's what reconnects you. And passion is, it literally means to sacrifice. So in that regard, Bree and I have often thought, what does it mean to sacrifice for one another to make the relationship work? And I think that the one, this was a question that we had, what is the, I think somebody had asked, like, what is the one, like, you know, this has to always be on the table. This has to always happen. You have to always be willing to fight for each other. And for me at the time, it was like counseling was the thing. If we do counseling and we can make this work, then great. And we did about 4 months of pretty steady counseling. And then I did another 2 months on my own. And we have gone back to see counselors since at times when we need help. But we learned so much that I'm not going to go over here. If you want great counseling advice, probably listen to your podcast. But it was like simple things like, hold each other's hand when you have a conversation and like learn to let each other speak and like all of these little tips and tricks. And to be armed with that at 19, why do people wait till they're 30, 40 and they have kids to be like, now we're going to go to counseling as a very, very last resort? And I felt like that was just super helpful.
Interesting in relationships, because passion is a choice also, as is commitment. I think a lot of couples believe that when that lust or the passion kind of wanes, mm-hmm. that just means it's dead. But it really means that you've stopped putting in the time to say to yourself every day.
You have to feed it. Yeah.
Exactly.
From the base of our relationship, you always counseling was an option, and it was something I would urge everybody. And if you are too prideful to go to counseling, then I would reevaluate your commitment to that relationship.
Well, and also the premarital counseling part, we haven't even gotten to the getting married part. We're still dating. We're still in high school.
It was a huge road to get there.
But premarital counseling, just as an aside, increases your chance for success in your relationship by 36%. So your innate instinct to do that early counseling was helpful. Premarital counseling isn't therapy. And it sounds like you did more skills learning than real therapy.
It was
skills,
tools. It was being armed with tools.
Yes,
and
huge.
I think sometimes, just in my thought, Bree, you can give me your thoughts on this. We sort of grow up and we think like, oh, well, my religion is going to arm me with all the tools I need, or my, you know, this peer that I trust or whatever. But when
I
really
saw my parents, so that must be all the info I need.
Yeah. And it's like, no, it's not. Like, you need more than that. And that was a really – and I feel like I gained – tools that I apply to every to speaking, to communicating, to hearing people out, to feeling empathetic towards someone's situation. Like, I didn't understand how to feel real empathy for Bree in some of these situations. I would say that one of the, and this is a hard thing to really unpack, but like, we had a tragedy within Bree's family. Her dad passed away right before we got married, and that, I mean, I'm a 20-year-old boy who has never had a death in his family, literally has zero idea how to deal with this. And right before we're supposed to get married, this happens. And it, for everything that it did to destroy, you know, the well-being of the family, it also, I think, drew us all together, drew me and Bree together. That tragedy was like a make or break. It was like, we were going to have to figure it out or not, because the whole time I'm like, are we still going to get married? I don't know what's going to happen. I would go.
Well, and everything got real.
Everything got really
Before,
real.
Before it was the love
really
story
fast.
Of two young kids. And then, Roger dies and life becomes.
3 months before we're supposed to get married.
And had we not had that counseling, I just don't know if that ever would have.
For sure.
And I'm grateful it happened when it did because of what it taught me, and it's helped us. That was real. Mm-hmm. That was real. Like,
everything else is just noise.
Yeah. From 33-year-old Chris, like me traveling for 18 days and going on a trip and being like sad and lonely and like, that's not like, this is real. And our relationship was rooted in the fact that like, we clung to one another when we needed it. And Bree saw me and expected me to rise to the occasion because there wasn't other men in her life or mom's life. And so I felt,
You became the man of the family at like 20, right before we got married. And that was a lot to put on his shoulders. And a lot came from that we have had to work through. I've had to work through individually. And I often think, if I didn't have him as a partner, would I have rose to the occasion? Would I have fulfilled and become the best version of myself? And I know with everything inside me that because I have him as a partner, he's pulled, encouraged me to make the most of even the terrible things that happen in our life. And for that, I'm very grateful, very blessed. My whole family is.
If you're just tuning in, my conversation today is with Chris and Brianne Burkhart, and we're talking about how they make it work, how they keep their family and their careers and their interests and their lives in a balance, in the delicate balance that we're all searching for.
Brie has a really beautiful perspective on that idea of balance. I'm sorry if I cut you off. No, that's okay. While you brought it up, I was like, oh man, like I really want her to talk about that because it's almost a joke. We say it a lot, the balance, find balance, but it's actually like we don't believe in balance at all. And it's kind of almost an inside joke.
Because it's unrealistic. Yeah. It's one of those things that is absolutely unattainable. If you're chasing balance, you'll never find it. But there's a rhythm to our life. And rhythm has peaks and valleys, and it has highs and lows, and it has a spectrum of space that you can exist within. But to keep a beat flowing, you have to be on the same wavelength. Mm-hmm. And so no matter what happens in life, no matter how, you know, at certain times he's selfish, at certain times I'm selfish, we share that space together. And as long as we're on the same wavelength, we can achieve some sort of connection through it.
And I do. And I want to back up a little bit to Roger's passing and you getting married, because you got married very young. And the clinician in me is always saying,
statistically,
this is not a good story. Like, please don't try this at home.
Right.
You
know, yeah, I would say the same thing.
But if you meet your high school sweetheart, then the odds of you getting this far are very low. But
they're not in your favor.
They're not in your favor. So we're not advocating that. But here's the story of Brie and Chris. And I think when you talk about this seminal moment, when you had taken some time with the skills, but it changes how you see Chris, because he's the link to the story of your dad.
Oh, for
you know?
Sure.
And so if you had not stayed with Chris and it had been someone else, that person would have never known your dad. And I think in some ways that also helps cement and keep your relationship together, because he embodies not just who he is, but that memory and that experience of that your dad.
And the official passing over of responsibilities to, like, and my dad always said, he's like, I never want to have to give you away, which is such a funny way to get out of it.
Dad's an irony, Dad.
But he really had strong goals and expectations and hopes for me and for my sister and our partners in life. And Chris felt that responsibility from that beginning. And that almost set the ultimate fire under his feet to provide and to create a sustainable life for us, because it was living up to the legacy of what my dad left behind. And it was honoring the promise that Chris made to my dad of, I will take care of her. So he took that and he ran with it.
When you asked Roger for Bree's hand, did you do a traditional asking for his blessing?
Yeah, I mean, that was actually, this is a funny, interesting story. It kind of leads towards, I think, giving advice on another aspect of maybe my own career or drive or ambition or passion or whatever you call it. But I remember specifically asking him for Bree's hand in marriage. And I was like, you know, I approached him and I was like, I love your daughter. I'd like to marry her. I'd like to ask your permission. And he just stared at me and basically was like, how are you going to support her? And this was at the time when I was literally had zero career. I barely had equipment. I was, just barely on the brink of starting to really shoot photographs full time. When he told me those words, like how he supported, like, I mean, I deflated. Like I deflated. Like talk about feeling small. Like I felt tiny. And I think that I realized, you know, Roger's whole life was built around the idea of supporting his daughters and his wife and his family. And he did that beautifully. And I just realized like I had nothing to offer maybe in his eyes. And so I took that as, like if passion is something that needs fire, like this was the dry brush pile that I had been saving for years just to basically light that. And I swear to you, like there has never been anything in my life that I think has driven me to prove myself more than that. I would say that it was a really challenging experience because, you know, Roger passed away maybe 6 months later, whatever that was. And I don't think he ever got a chance to really see or witness the success that I've been able to find. And so much of that was to prove to Brie, prove to her mom, prove to Roger.
Why that time? You guys were 20.
Why did we decide 21? Well, the 21. Reality, it's
we
super
funny.
We got
married at 21, but we got engaged at 20. So yeah, we were young.
I have told a lot of people in private and on podcasts, I'm like, I would attribute all my success in life to the fact that I got married when I did. And let me just tell you why. Like my focus in what I was doing, I would say any other 20-year-old male, female, like, what is maybe 80% of your time
looking
usually
for other 20-year-olds?
Looking for other 20-year-olds so you can do whatever you're going to do. But that's the reality. It's like, this was before the days of Tinder and before the days of whatever. And you know, it was like, your time would be like, oh, I'm going to go out on weekends, go to the bar. I'm going to go to my, so.
Well, and it's all self-serving. Yeah. And at that young age, we committed to each other enough that we were going to better ourselves for each other, but also be there for each other. Yeah. And he set into this goal and this mindset that was not just internally focused. It was, yeah, of course he wanted to be and do things in his life, but he wanted to do that so that he could support us and so that we could support each other. I was a manager of a surf shop at the time. Like, we have very humble very humble beginnings. And I think for me, if I was to answer that question of why we got married as young as we did, is it all comes down to faith for us. We wanted to live a life that had a certain set of standards and a certain focus and a center for our relationship. And so us getting married at the age that we were allowed us to live the standards that we wanted to and motivated us in that way. It is not by any means the reason why we got married, but it lit the question of, is this the person that I want to spend the rest of my life with? And if it's not, then move on. Yeah. Don't waste your time. Mm-hmm. So we were seriously asking that question to ourselves so that we could prioritize the right things in our life.
I think in a practical sense too, what I've come to the conclusion of, and I want to say a couple of things that are just like, these are super unsexy, but the fact is, the truth is, I couldn't find any excuse not to. Mm-hmm. And I say that in the way
to
that
get
like,
married.
Not to. Like, mm-hmm. I loved this person. She was everything. She provided me with everything I needed, the support, the emotional, yada, 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 all the boxes checked. And I think a lot of people do this. They have those boxes checked and they're just like, oh, but I'm just waiting for the right time. I'm just waiting for the right time. And I hear this advice from people too who they're older and they're like, oh, yeah, no, you need to wait till like, man, you got a house and you have this and that. You're set up and you're dialed and everything's good and your bank account's good. And like, because the reality is if you ever want to make a relationship work, you need to join together at a time where your life is not completely cemented in. Like, how hard is it for you to uncement yourself from traditions and ways of thinking and thoughts and all of a sudden bring somebody else in when that's all set up? And what I mean by that is I've found that by suffering together and struggling together, it has made us a million times stronger. Getting married at 21 was probably the hardest thing I've ever done in my entire life. Specifically those first 4 or 5 years, and then you add kids on it at 26 and it makes life extremely hard. Has that made us closer? Absolutely. If I would have waited till my bank account was good and all these things and I had a hat, blah, 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 I don't even know if I would be able to bring somebody into my life being the crazy, you know,
as you say, you'd be hard to
control
live with,
freak.
Right?
Yeah, control freak that I am. I don't know if I'd even be able to do that. And I think a lot of people get in that situation. Like, we are all of a sudden fully formed human beings. Me and Bree were moldable in the sense that, like, she introduced me to some of the greatest things in my life, climbing, yoga, et cetera, et cetera. I introduced her to a lot of things in her life, things that she'd never done before. So we were growing together. And that greatest attributes of getting married young that I can ever say is just
– takes a certain level of humility to be able to be together at that young of an age and to know that you have work to put in and be willing to do it.
And I also was 21, and I've been with my husband since I was 19, so I also know the hubris of young.
Yeah.
All my husband and I did was fight.
Oh, I thought you were going to say another F word.
Consistently. Well, yeah, there's
that's
all
you.
That all is the passion piece. But the I think the part that we gloss over is how much fighting you do when you're young and you're trying to navigate.
WWF.
Yes, growing up together is not just, hey, we were young and we grew up together, it was beautiful. No, you're fighting everything because you still want to be independent, but you're married and you have. So let's be honest a little bit about that.
When people ask me about our
I'm a dumb 20-year-old. I mean, I'm the worst.
Well,
right?
When people ask me about our relationship, I say, okay, have you ever seen The Notebook? They say they like fight hard and they love hard.
Yes.
That is us. Yes. That's not was us. That is us. We fight hard. We love hard. Being together at that young of an age, I couldn't even keep track of how many times both of us questioned whether or not we were right for each other.
Right.
See, I appreciate that because that is – the truth.
Yeah.
Totally.
And that's where it comes into the bigger picture of me saying we continue to choose each other.
Yeah.
So even though we questioned.
Every day.
Yeah, every day. It's
sometimes every minute.
Every 30 seconds. But ultimately for me is that I could get caught up in the thinking of things. Mm-hmm. And the thinking of, well, he's not really A, B, or C.
Right.
He's not really providing this. He's gone a lot. He's doing all these other things. Well, he doesn't really
he's
care.
He's not 5 foot 11.
Yeah. I am taller. And I could get caught up in the thinking of things, mm-hmm. but I've always let my heart, my gut lead me through life. Yeah. And I think that leap of faith is what you need right. in order to survive in marriage, no matter what age you do it. And have trust in how your own feelings are. And now that doesn't mean I don't have feelings at times that are like, I can't stand this person. Mm-hmm. I don't think that we could last for another year. It just means that, okay, something isn't working here. And this is information that I am grateful to be acknowledging. This upset, this uncomfortable feeling, this anger, this resentment, this frustration. This is coming up so that we can move ourselves in a better direction so we can survive the next year, the next 10 years. Mm-hmm. I feel like a lot of people avoid discomfort because it is uncomfortable and you push it away and you push it away and you cover it up with other yeah. things.
Well, and our cultural story is about always feeling good and mm-hmm. avoiding. There is no cultural model that says go deep into the suffering.
Yes. And the thing is we avoid right before the suffering because we're afraid of how deep it is and how long it will last, right. not understanding that if you move through it, you come out on the other side so much yeah. better.
It's like, no, every growth spurt mm-hmm. we've had in our relationship has been through some traumatic experience, through some suffering, through something like that, through a hard earned lesson. And as long as you learn to like, and you're able to lean on that person in those times of trial, whatever, then I think you'll find like a really beautiful, you know, there's a rose at the end of that or whatever you want to say.
We still have such endless amounts of growth to be doing in our relationship. We were arguing last night about all these
yeah,
questions.
We were like, good timing. Glad we're doing a podcast. Freaking hate you.
No. Exactly.
No,
I don't want to see you right now.
It was really interesting though, because it's more work showing up for us. Once you're never done. And that's why we enjoyed doing yoga together. Every time or praying together or having all these things that help empower us and make us better yeah. people, because when we can't stand each other, when we're stuck in our lives, we have these resources and these tools we can lean yeah. on that are pushing us through it.
Well, and sometimes you just are existing too.
Oh, yeah.
Because even though it sounds
life
nice.
Life is just too busy.
Right. Sometimes we'll say, well, we need to have this conversation, but I'll see you
shelve
in 3 weeks. Yeah. We
need
to shelve it. And it, looking at the whole kind of morph and growth of relationships and kind of those learning as we go, love and hate aren't opposite of each other. They live on the same side of the spectrum.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
So you can love and hate with the same amount of passion.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that's another piece, is that people who look at their marriage and avoid the conflict or avoid the confrontations, the love dies because they never address the heat of the dislike or even the feelings of hate in that moment. And then once that love and hate die, you have indifference. And that's where a lot of couples just lose interest. To have the faith that you can get through fiery periods of time, there is all of those, the commitment and the passion that goes into it. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. My guests are Chris and Brianne Burkhart, and they are in here today to talk about the truth of their relationship. Because when Chris is on the road, one of the most common questions he gets is, how do you do this?
I'd love to just start to answer some questions, because I feel like there was really some specific questions, and I feel like we could talk all day about the origins of our relationship, and I just want to address some of the other things and the tools and the ways in which we kind of make aspects of this long distance relationship and or a relationship that requires both of us to kind of, I guess, take on certain responsibilities within our marriage at times. And so I think getting back to this idea of rhythm, it's really interesting, because the concept is that it's not about balance. You're never going to find balance. It's all about rhythm. Even like certain years, like people ask all the time, how much does Chris travel? How much? Well, it depends. It depends on the year. I remember the year that I made this film, Under Arctic Sky, the year following was maybe one of the most chaotic travel years of my life because – and the rhythms became very, very much like separated, right? Like
it was feast or famine.
Big valleys and big peaks, right? Like I would be gone. I toured it in like, you know, tons of countries and I did like 150 screenings myself and it was just nonstop working on it, promoting it, et cetera, et cetera. So that was a huge investment of time that required a massive understanding on Bree's part and on my part of like what this is going to take. Like, and it's hard because if you're just starting out in your career and you don't really know like, oh, I want to make a book or I want to make a film, you might not have the understanding of like how much that might take away from family life to really see it through. And I feel like now that I've had this experience, I have a better evaluation. So understanding that this is now coming up, I could kind of brace ourselves for that, that sort of massive time commitment. Other years, it's not as much traveling. I think that what we've found as maybe a solution for us is that being gone for a longer period of time and or building trips back to back to back is easier than like being home for a day, gone for 4 days, home for 2 days, gone for 4 days. Why is that? Because as some questions have alluded to, like how do you deal with having your head kind of floating in the clouds, dealing with, you know, the high of traveling and then trying to come home and assimilate? And I think one tool that Bree's really provided for me that's been awesome is not just coming back and being like, hey, here's the kid, watch him, it's your turn. It's like understanding that first and foremost, the job is not always a joy, right? Like there are some true struggles. There are some trips that are so incredibly hard that it beats me up inside. Sometimes when I come home, I need a day for myself to assimilate back into the family. That is one of the greatest gifts she gives me, is like not being like, you know, and I'm going to break this down a little more, but not being like, okay, you need to do this and this and this and this, but like giving me time to be like, eat a great meal, get a good night's sleep. If you need to go surf or you need to go like spend a day to find you, you do that. And but then you really show up after that.
And the only reason we were able to do that and I was able to give him that space is because I had support in the back in the times that he was gone. Because there were years and times, especially when the kids were little, where I was spent. I didn't have anything else to give him, right, to give the kids, to give anybody. And so it took me outsourcing a lot of responsibilities as babysitters so I could have an hour to go to yoga, house cleaners so that I could not have to worry about the mundane everyday kind of cleaning and things like that.
And this isn't
so
like that, every single day. This
right.
Is like, yeah,
so that Chris could come home. The house could be clean. The kids could have some space. And even if the day he came home, I left and had the babysitter there for a few hours so that I wasn't resentful of him being home. Like sometimes that's what was needed. This is one of the times we revisited counseling where I was feeling a lot of resentment because he was gone all the time and the kids were young and I felt like I didn't have the help that I needed. Yeah. And I expected it from him because that's the model I saw growing up. The dad was very present. The dad was involved. Our counselor turned to us and said, so why don't you get a babysitter sometimes? And I was like, I don't know, because I had this perception and picture in my head that I only wanted family with the kids.
You would do it all.
And that I would do it all or he would do it all. And it was very rigid. And that saved my life. And why don't you get a house cleaner? Oh my gosh, I don't know. I don't know why I didn't do that, because in my head I felt like it was a very privileged way to live. But at the same time, we're sending him away to provide for us. This is part of that providing in order for me to stay sane and to stay healthy.
And actually, so it wasn't this like ridiculous cost or amount of money. Like
it was like a babysitter twice a week and like a house cleaner twice a month. But it made a huge difference in relieving the stress and pressure on my shoulders. And then the key, which I kind of cut him off when he was saying it, was that after he reintegrates for himself and fills back up his cup a day, two days, he shows up all the way. So he needs to be present emotionally, physically. He needs to make sure that he is taking the kids to school or that we're going on a date night and we're taking that time, because there were years where he was so empty himself. He would come home and like checked out even though his body was there, you know?
So I can imagine that you had this vision in your head that Chris will go out, he'll come home, I'll have a nice dinner, everything will be so lovely, the boys will be, you know, immaculate. At what point did the plan fall apart?
The hardest time in our relationship was 100% the first year of my oldest son's life. And
so you'd been married for 6 years.
6 years. Jeremiah was just born. Mm-hmm. We were doing fine. Yeah, 2012, 2013 was the hardest time when Jeremiah was just born.
That's just when things were peaking for Chris.
Yes. His life, his career was like a runaway freight train. Yeah. And I felt like I was like, whoo, left in the dust. I can't even hold on.
Right.
And we were fighting all the time. And Jeremiah was a colicky, high needs baby. And we were entering this new phase of life. And I had all the resources for our child. And Chris really couldn't soothe a lot of those things. So you're dealing with normal everyday dynamics of having a dad and a mom have a new baby and the stresses of that, on top of him being gone and having a new office and new employees and responsibilities. And then me just being like, okay, I guess I'm just going to hold down this fort as much as I can, but I have no clue how to do it. So
yeah. it was a lot of new terrain for her
in the moment.
And it's kind of, and this is the scary thing, is that for me at the same time, being on the road started to feel
better,
more familiar, mm-hmm. and easier.
And it was easier to have him gone.
And it was honestly easier for me to be gone. And that was one of the most challenging things.
You were almost
things.
In the way at that point.
Right. Yes. And I think this is the biggest challenge for me was, and this was like an aha, somebody asked us to, an aha moment. What
the
was
light
the aha
moment?
Light bulb
yeah.
moment. And what I realized is, like, I would come home some trips, for example, on my wavelength is like this. It's just spiking and peaking. It's up there. Like I'm on like whatever pitch you want to be, you know, and Bree's kind of like in this low doldrum state where she's been breastfeeding.
I'm exhausted.
And exhausted. And I'm like, I come in the door and it's like bursting with energy. I want to share with you everything that's gone on. Like I just, oh my God, I filmed surfing under the Northern Lights. Best trip of my life.
Yes.
I'm like, it was like spiritual out of body experience. And she's just like, And I'm like, oh my God, I'm so glad I got all that out. Like, what do you think? And it's just, I look back at those moments and I'm like, man, the what asinine behavior to think that like she can even comprehend that or take it in and reciprocate what I'm hoping she can, which is like, wow, I'm so proud of you,
yes,
honey. That's
best.
Incredible. That's right. So amazing. Like, I can't wait to see this. When really, like, I've had to realize that even in that time where I have to assimilate, when we both show up, we need to both like be like, when is the time we can kind of debrief? We talked, mm-hmm. we've discussed this idea of like debriefing and sort of in our relationships and like, when is an appropriate time? When does that happen? And it always changes. Understanding when your needs are met, understanding when her needs are met, and then realizing, and whether that's like me watching the kids so she can go out and do these things, or getting a sitter or whatever, or me like, hey, like my back is tweaked. I just like was on a boat and like I'm seized up. I need to get a, you know, me. The guilt of feeling like I need to go see a chiropractor or go get a massage the day after I get home from a 12-day trip in Greenland is kind of a joke, right? Mm-hmm. But truly, like, I can't even hold my kid. My back hurts so much. So understanding when our needs are met, and those needs can be anything. It can be passion. It can be lovemaking. It can be going out to dinner. It can be just listening, which Bree has tried to teach me to do. I'm not the best at it. Understanding the fact that I needed, and it was critical to realize that if I'm trying to meet her at where my energy
yep,
is,
your level
it's,
of intensity.
it's never going to allow us to be closer until I accept like where she has been and in what, at what time point I can sort of meet that. And I think that, the reality is that traveling has provided me a lot of incredible, experiences that have been out of my comfort zone. And so I think the light bulb moment for me truly was that I needed to be fostering those same experiences for her in any way that I could, because there is a period within every, I think, caretaker's life where they give a lot to somebody else and there is no growth. And so if living outside your comfort zone provides growth, wherein does that happen for them?
Because
to be empty.
And I'll add on, because I was stunted in a way, because I was going through the everyday thing without utilizing my community or the things that I needed to. But for me, I found myself, all I can handle is today. I'm just going to focus on today. Yes, were there lessons in there? And I learned and grew for sure. But I emotionally was not supported and fulfilled and getting the most out of that experience because I wasn't supporting myself through all the different resources, because ultimately he couldn't have been there.
This is what she educated me on. And so me as a husband listening to what my wife needs, I realized, first of all, I do her no service. And it doesn't matter if you're, if this is vice versa, if the wife is doing it and the dad has stayed home or whatever your relationship is. The point being is that the person who is going out and
Whoever that is. And I've seen that happen if the wife's out.
Totally. The person who is going out and is having an incredible out-of-body experience and is bringing this back to your significant other is not allowing them or giving them the time or to create similar experiences. And for Bree, this is a big thing, is like her dream wasn't to go out and travel the world.
Right.
It was something different,
yeah,
which I had to learn as well to be like, oh, I could invite Bree on a million trips, but she didn't want to go spend 10 days in Norway with a van with five stinky dudes. That wasn't her dream. Mm-hmm. And so I think me trying to understand what that was took a long time,
mm-hmm,
and took many years, but that brought a lot of growth.
Yeah, and I feel like, honestly, I could look back, our two light bulb moments was the first year of Jeremiah's life, which was a struggle. It was so hard. That's when we went back to counseling. That's when we really had to keep choosing each other because we were both kind of checked out because it was just easier to be checked out. So we had to really pull ourselves back into the trenches and do the work again that we knew we had learned way long ago but gotten out of the routine of because of life. And then we had another kid 2 years later, and things improved because we started sharing more of life together. But it wasn't until my 30th birthday, he took me backpacking overnight in Big Sur, that we realized spending uninterrupted time together without cell phone service, which is really hard with kids at home, but I had my mom there.
I am impressed.
I had my mom there. coming back together, doing something that he's been wanting to share with me, something that I'd never experienced before, getting out of my comfort zone, pushing me, which a lot of the time I was like, I don't know if I can do this. And he was just constantly pushing me to come back and meet him there. It was realizing in that time that we still liked each other and that we still wanted to have that time together, that I was like, I will fight to have these moments again. And it is so easy when you get into the mundane experience of everyday life to forget, A, that you like the person you chose to be with,
absolutely,
and B, that there's these experiences that can transcend and help you get outside of your bubble of life and have perspective that this is a season we're in. Mm-hmm. We have kids, early ages.
Yeah.
This is a season.
It's a rhythm.
We're going to be back together, and it's just going to be us again one day. And do we still like each other? And are we doing the work to like each other?
I started to see Bree as a mom, and understanding Bree's identity outside of a mom was what made me, I think, fall in love with her again. Because again, just like I might come home and be like, oh my gosh, this happened, blah, blah, blah. She might be like, oh my gosh, Jeremiah just did this and you missed that. And it was so cute. But, you know, I also couldn't relate to that. And so we had to outside of Chris's work, outside of Bree's job at this time, one time period as a mom, what were we doing together? And I don't want to make this all about I took her outside of her. Bree also introduced me to yoga, which was totally being pushed outside of everything I ever thought I was capable of. And then also introduced me to climbing. So Bree has been.
And bringing him back and really throwing the fishing line out to pull him back into parenting.
Right.
Because parenting was a place that he wasn't confident or comfortable in, and there was such a value and is such a value for his role in our lives as a dad and as a parent to and a partner for me, that it took 2, 3, 4 years of us being parents for Chris to find his place there. Mm-hmm. And for me to keep extending the invitation and giving him grace, because where I am, and I've talked about this with people in my life, where I was in the trenches every day with those kids, knowing them inside and out. Chris had the ability to just come and insert himself back in once in a while, and then feeling really unprepared. It's like going on a climbing trip and you're only able to train here and there, and then he comes back in. So I had to give him the grace of you're going to figure out parenting in your own way, and mm-hmm, it's not going to be the same style as me.
Yeah.
And
that's actually a really good point. I never thought about that.
I haven't thought about it in a while. Is very common that the moms get so good at their job that it's almost a hassle to have.
For sure.
Well, the thing is, you as a mom, I'm sure you learned and you grew and you failed and you learned, and all of a sudden to be it's challenging for me to come home and be
fail.
Well, we do it this way. No. Well, Jeremiah wants this, and to understand that can also be a sense of it can create a kind of a barrier,
There, and to you being involved.
To me, feeling it all well, I know I can figure this out. I want to do this. I was like willing to fail and like be a bad dad to figure out how to be a good dad. But like Bree wouldn't let me do that.
And he already felt so much guilt.
Well, because she nailed it, because she had figured it out, you know. And it's like that's a challenging game that I think we get into as parents, even for ones that don't – husbands or wives that don't travel a lot. This is something where like this can happen on the day to day, you know, and like,
and he was already coming in feeling guilty, missing stuff. Yeah. And so there's complex. So although I could get 33-year-old perspective, I look back and I think I was resentful of this awesome time that he would have away from us with people, away from the flu season or whatever I was having to deal with.
Coming home with a tan in the middle of winter.
Yeah, exactly. I would be resentful of that. But the reality is I never got a full perspective until we went on a few trips together. Mm-hmm. Never long. I can't leave my kids for long. It's just not in me.
But prior to that, we did some longer trips.
Yes,
for sure.
It wasn't until I did that and I got through terrible travel days, missing our kids so bad that we came home a day early, doing all those things where I was like, I've got the easy job, guys. Like, I have my community of people. I get to go to church every Sunday. I get to have my family around me. I get to see my kids grow up. And I get to sleep in my bed every night. And it doesn't mean that he doesn't have great, incredible experiences. But it just means that I have perspective now that I appreciate what he does. And I give him grace and he gives me grace. But it's that perspective. And we need reminders all the time. Because I could get into that obsessive thinking over why can't I have this and why does he have that until we put each other in each other's shoes and see it for what it is.
And vice versa.
You're listening to my guest, Breanne Burkhart, and her husband, Chris Burkhart. They're here today talking about their relationship. They promised me that they would, no filter, tell the truth. So that's what we're doing.
Here
you're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. All right. Questions that have been posed. Are you ready?
Yes.
Absolutely.
Number one, how do you make distance work while you're traveling? Because traveling is fundamental in your work with screen limited interactions. Because helpful having.
Do you mean being limited to screen interactions?
Yes. Oh, did I say it incorrectly?
No. Yeah. I couldn't tell if you meant like by not using your cell phone because that's not.
Mm. No, but when you. And there's a part of me that wonders, too, is it helpful doing the FaceTime or does it even make it more painful? How do you make that distance work?
Shoot. You know, Bree's – I think, first of all, we read this book, The Five Love Languages, years ago. I'm sure you've recommended
it. That was our wedding
gift. That was one of our wedding gifts. We're big on like self-help or books or podcasts or whatever. So I think just in general, sharing – is important. Like what does Bree have going on this week while I'm away in Iceland doing this thing? Like what is she listening to? What is she hearing?
Trying to kind of normalize
her sending me that stuff, almost like acting like I'm not gone. Like, oh, hey, Jeremiah, I had a rough day at school today, blah, blah, blah. Like giving me a debrief, a breakdown, whatever, via text, via something else. That's really helpful because I feel then like, okay, cool. I've been brought up to speed. Acting like I'm on the other side of the planet when I've got cell phone service and everything's fine. And although I am on the other side of the planet, like that's really nice. And even if it means like me having a couple buzzer noises next to my bed and when waking up, like I appreciate that. And I think.
So does that help you with the travel or do you think it helps bringing the kids?
I think for sure. Yeah.
For me recently, there's been a few times that he's been gone where I'm just breaking down. I've just had a really hard day with the kids. I'm feeling like I'm not doing a good job, you know, needing that emotional support. And he's taking the time out. Like I've got 5 minutes here. I've only got 5 minutes. And it's terrible because you're like, I can't talk to you about what's going on in your stuff, but he'll listen to me for those 5 minutes and then he's got to go. And I know that's probably really hard for him, but he takes that load off of me enough that I feel like, okay, I can go back
learning
and do
to
it.
Listen is like what something Bree has really taught me is like learning to just to listen.
Not try to fix it.
Yes.
Yeah, because I'm really bad about that.
That's okay.
I'm really bad about like, well, dude, have you tried this? What about that? You know, and
that
I
is
think
a guy thing.
It,
yes.
Totally. No, and I've understood that. And if even if it means like, hey, I'm going to listen to you for 5 minutes, then I'm like, hey, I got to go. I'm so sorry. But at least I can digest it. And then later that night, we could talk or 2 days later, we could talk and I'd be like, I thought about this. Mm-hmm. I need probably a time. I would say that, you know, and I think you've spoken to me about this, Elizabeth, is like, text is just such an unnatural form of communication. The inflection of our voice.
It's empty.
I'm, you know, I'm fine. can mean a million different things in a million different ways.
It
can mean I'm fine, or I mean, oh, I'm fine. Like, it can mean everything. And so hearing someone's voice.
Even love you can have a lot of
meaning. Yes.
Oh, gosh. Yeah. Well, with this, it's like we text. Yes, we're not better than anybody else on that. But we try to keep the important stuff to, like, hey, let me call you for 3 minutes. And I'm just going to talk to you for 3 minutes. Even if it's that 3 minute call, hearing what someone's going through, I'm like, okay, I can sense and feel and know what you're hearing. And for future couples and relationships, I know somebody asked, like, oh, well, how do I manage, like, the best form of communication with my partner? I think you just ask them, like, what is your, like, not like in an interview way, but like, what is the way you want to communicate? How do we do this?
What's your love language? Do you want to have me send you flowers while I'm gone on a trip? Do you want to have me leave a note somewhere? Like, sometimes
that's
I'll just
Breeze. She's like, and I'm always failing at that. And she wants me to
true.
Say that.
Rewrite those notes and then you've got them
that's
ready to go.
That's what I said. If it was anything else, he would structure it in a way that it would put in there. But
exactly.
He gets
I can see him in your folder all ready to go.
Breeze good at that. She's like, I'll dig through my bag and I'll have a note that's like, hey, I love you. And I'm like, that means so much to me. And then I throw it away.
Yes.
And also when you ask
someone how you want to be heard, to say, do you want me to hate someone with you? Do you want me just to listen? Do you want advice? You know, just find out how you want to be heard. Because some days you do want advice. And some days just let me vent. Mm-hmm. But you have to ask that too.
And that comes from a time of just like hearing her talk for enough to be like, this is one of those times where I just shut my mouth and I just listen and
it's changed over the years too. Yeah. And I think he's helped me. I could get into a mindset of being critical of all these things in my life. And he's like, okay, I heard all of this stuff, but is there anything good that happened today? And I was
a little reminder.
Yeah. Okay, fine. Yeah. I'll share something good with you.
And it doesn't mean about being too precious to not call somebody out when, like, hey,
100%.
You kind of sound like that. Like, gosh, we're away. I don't want this conversation to
right,
end
we
bad.
Can't have a disagreement.
Yeah,
long
like,
distance.
Don't be afraid of that because, geez,
we definitely
like,
have those.
For me, for her to see me and be like, hey, Chris, like, you're kind of sounding negative, Nancy. Like, why don't you just be appreciative? Tell me one thing you're grateful for.
Yeah, what happens when all of the good intentions fail and you can't seem to
get on the same page?
Yeah.
So sometimes that happens before he even leaves. So there have been times where he's left on a bad note, and that is like the kiss of death for that trip because you're left with unsaid things, unfelt emotions. Mm-hmm. You
catastrophize all the bad things that are going to happen.
Yes.
Because you've jinxed it.
Yes. Yeah. And there's all of that energy and pressure to make it better before he leaves. But then it's just really a Band-Aid that never gets solved. Sometimes the greatest gift that's happened is him leaving because that time away gives us perspective. And usually, I don't know, correct me if I'm wrong, babe, but 9 times out of 10, you leave, and the first day or two, you're like, I miss you so much.
Yeah, totally.
I love you so much.
Totally. We talked about this last night, actually, in bed. This was one of the topics that I was like, you know, it's funny because I'm typically like packing till 2:30 a.m. the night before I leave. I have a 4 a.m. flight or something like this, and I'm trying to get in everything. I'm trying to eat a great meal, exercise, spend time with Brie, pack my bags,
hang out with the kids,
and I'm pet the dog, feed the alpacas. I'm doing it all, and I'm like, you know what? I've realized that. That is super unhealthy for me. And if I can start the packing process of a trip a week prior to where I'm done, and those last 48 hours are like chill. Like we were just talking about this. Like that, I guess what I'm saying is like that sets up a better trip as well as a better departure. And I think that a big part of why these issues happen is because we don't have time for each other because I'm so busy.
And we get anxious about being separated.
Yeah, we're nervous already. Yeah, it's like stressful. So taking that time to be like, okay, I'm going to half pack my bags, work on it every day, think about it. So the last 20, 48 hours, we have time to like connect, maybe watch a show. It's more chill. I get a good night's sleep, yada, yada, yada.
That takes a lot of maturity because my husband traveled a lot as well. And as soon as a suitcase came out, I would be sad. So if that suit came out a week before, I think I would struggle with that. Like, oh, this makes me sad. So maybe you've just
it does make me sad
it.
For sure.
It makes
it still
Chris
does.
Sad. Yeah,
so that's probably why you wait till the last minute.
But it's like I don't know about you, but when you tell me this, when he leaves for you, on a good note, it's harder for someone to leave on a good note. She's like, oh my love, like I'm leaving,
it's
like
our broken. Hand,
yeah. Yes. And when I leave on a bad note, It's still hard, but it's hard in a different way. It's like you feel a little achy inside and you feel like a sore throat almost. Where you're like, oh, like I hate that feeling.
So, we came up with the night before every trip was sex night.
Heck yeah.
Everything else had to be done because if all else failed, that had to be the last thing we did together.
Yes, I agree.
I respect that a lot.
No, that is our go-to. Yeah.
As long as Bree makes that decision.
And then when he comes home, yes, that's usually the first thing we reintegrate. Piece. But it's very interesting.
It sounds so like
it sounds
so funny, but it's so true, yeah. You know?
That connecting of the relationship you have has to come before even seeing the kids or feeding the alpaca.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
And no matter how tired you are, that's my number one thing is like, you know, even if it takes a little rallying to get on board because you're both like living a crazy life, no one's ever regretted it once you've gotten into it.
No,
so
once you get started.
And it always leaves you both feeling better and connected. And I think for me, it's funny when we talk about leaving on a trip, the first few years, I swear, and you could correct me again if I'm wrong, you'd pick a fight before you leave. Or I might, maybe once in a while, pick a fight before you leave because it's easier in a way to leave when you're already pissed off at that person.
Yes.
No, you're spot on. I think that's
and
a good
so
point.
It's been a conscious thought for both of us that we really want to value that time together, which also brings me to, I might not even intend it, but originally, when we first got married, after my dad died, I had extreme anxiety.
Yes, I was
going to
ask you about
panic.
That. How do you let him go? And not,
yes.
He's across the world.
And there was lots of situations and are lots of situations he puts himself in that are risky. And I think over time, I've had to learn to really trust his judgment. Mm-hmm. So
That was a question that came up. It's like, how do you manage the risk and the
worrying.
Yeah, and the worrying and so much that's built upon trust. Like, I'm not going to put myself in a situation that I don't feel prepared for mentally, physically,
confident
spiritually.
About.
Is that true?
I would absolutely say
it is
say
now.
So.
It wasn't always.
No, you're good call out. But yeah, I mean, like, it definitely, I've learned to be better without it with kids, I think.
Too. Yeah, with kids. When kids came around, I feel like it was harder and I had more anxiety the first 5 years of our marriage because he was still a 20-something-year-old kid who was like, I'm going to go conquer the world and skydive and, you know, climb Half Dome. And it's not that he's still not that person. It's just that I trust his decision-making abilities a little bit more now and that I've seen him face situations and say no to some things because he always used to be like a yes person all the time. Yeah. And that scared me because I'm like, where's your limit? And like, is there one?
I think she understands too now that so much of my growing up model was like being in a blue collar family where you never say no to anything.
Right.
Because it's opportunity.
And then me growing up and being like, oh, opportunities are coming my way. I'm going to say yes to everything. I'm so overworked and so overstressed. My cup is totally empty.
Coming, right?
Yeah. Yes. And now realizing that when I say no, I'm actually saying yes to something else and or to Bree. And I think making sure her cup is full is a big part of what allows me to feel safe taking certain risks. It's kind of a weird thing to say, but I guess like sort of periods to life is like pre-kids, early kids, and like now the stage that we're in, which now is so much about making sure she has this fulfillment day to day, which doesn't really come from the kids as much nowadays. They're kind of on autopilot and we're just like sort of there as those.
They're more independent.
They're independent.
They're and we're guides and mentors.
We're helping their independence. But so much of what we do now is just watch them do rad things. Watch them go to gymnastics. Watch them go climbing.
Or hold
watch
space
them
for them and help them navigate big issues that we're still dealing with as adults. So we're expecting these kids to handle all these issues that we're still trying to
But that
sort
was
through.
One of the big questions that came up, I think, multiple times for people is how do you work in the me time for Bree? Because we've talked a lot about...
No, I want to get into this. Yeah, this is super important.
Because that was, you know, the aha moments and really feeling depleted and Chris is packing up and leaving. So how did you find something for you and what did it take for you to get there? Because you had to let go of this control and perfectionist idea that you had to be all things.
And I would just say that on a previous one of your podcasts, you guys really dive into this deeply. So if people want like the full hour-long thing, that's a good one to maybe hear as well, because I'm sure you won't have enough time to like talk as much about that in depth.
So I think Chris, when I really think about it and why he's another reason why he's a good partner for me, is that he would reflect and have the ability to, he has a huge ability to of discernment. So he'll sit back and say, are these activities, are these things, are these people that you're surrounding yourself with inspiring you? Are they pushing you to be better? Are you getting sucked into something that's not healthy or people that aren't healthy and a toxic routine and not really caring for yourself? Like, yes, you're doing things that are self-care, quote unquote, but you're not really expanding yourself.
But having a self-care experience where everybody's talking about The Bachelor is maybe not the most like rewarding thing.
No one's gonna like me saying that.
I'm sorry, but like some, it's
hey,
like,
hey, we all need our cheesy TV once in a while.
But
how
sure.
we define self-care is in sometimes we do self-care that actually depletes us because we feel like I have to do this.
Well, and that's what I was saying. Brie's like, no, to keep these friendships, I have to go. And I'm like, babe, like you don't want to do this. You want to like, it's just, that's hard.
But so I want to get to just because side note too, that list of things that we feel like we must do. I have to do yoga. Then I have to exercise. Mm-hmm. Then I have to journal. Then I have to juice something. Mm-hmm. You know, that can be more stressful.
And mindless TV with a group of friends is still really fulfilling, but it's a matter of, are you branching out and finding a rhythm / balance into all those
and
things?
Curiosity about something
new. Yes. Curiosity about something new. Mm-hmm. That is the number one thing that I feel like me and my fellow mothers lose sight of once in a while because you're in the everyday curiosity and like finding something. And I feel like, once again, to say his reflection to me, that really put a mirror up to what I want to do, because I could get lost in the story that my job is to take care of the kids and to support Chris in his dream.
Yeah.
But what's my dream? Yeah, right. And my dream is to be a good mom and a good wife. But beyond that, who am I if I was to take all of that away? Mm-hmm. Because at the end of the day, at the end of your life, you want to be able to look in the mirror and see who you are with all of that. And without
what do you bring to the family? Yeah.
Yes.
And we all have to bring something to
And I think it's my responsibility to help her like find that in some way.
His way of doing it isn't look, anyone that knows Chris, this is the bottom line.
Yeah, let's get real
about this. His points are always profound and valid. His delivery sucks. And
yeah, I would agree with that.
And I know you
would.
I
don't like to waste time.
And so me softening those little rough edges is my responsibility, but his truthfulness and honesty is something I need. I don't think I would be who I am today if I was babied in my relationship.
If you coddled worry and anxiety, you would have been stuck.
I would have been stuck. Mm-hmm. So all of that to just say that he was waking me up to certain things that I was missing in my life. And I was able to then prioritize myself in a healthy way that I came home to my kids and I felt more filled up at the end of the day and could be a better mom and show up as a better mom and wife than ever before. One of those ways was horses. One of those ways was just getting out in nature, going on a hike, having some grounding, being out by the ocean, like very basic, simple things, and then having quality time with people that inspire me and want the best for me and are positive.
Mm-hmm. I think for Brie, one thing is just to make sure people understand that when you say horses, you're not giving the full picture. It's important to make sure you like Brie's not like, I just want to be around, I just hang around pastures. No, like you started riding because it's something you did as a kid.
Yes.
And you just as a, like, just like hiking or anything else or surfing, this was your thing and you wanted to try it.
And my way to experience nature and see it in a way that I hadn't before.
Developed into this incredible experience with equine therapy. And then you're basically able to now help battered women's groups and, you know,
service has always been something.
I just want to hear a little about that so people understand is all. Mm-hmm. So that
service has been something that I've been called to do for a long time. And through this new avenue that I've experienced, which is called Equine Guided Empowerment, I have discovered that a way to serve people that doesn't deplete me. And that is a key to keeping me happy and full. And with horses, I'm experiencing life and dealing with a lot of different challenges and struggles with the people and the clients that I serve in a way that isn't so much about nitpicking the problems that are going on in life, but finding a way to flow through them. Mm. And that's created a lot of freedom in my emotional well-being because, like you said, I am a perfectionist as well.
I've discovered that.
Mm-hmm. And I could be really critical of myself or about my life. And knowing that life is fluid and flexible, horses help teach you that every time you're with them.
Yeah, because they're not going to follow your lead
100%
unless they want to be
with the energy.
That movement, yeah. Mm-hmm. And there, and Brianne and I have talked about equine empowerment therapy, so it is available.
Yep.
My guest is Brianne Burkhart and her husband, Chris Burkhart, and we're here talking about their relationship and how they make it work. All right, so Chris, one of the questions was, and I loved this one, how do you keep from feeling weightless, like you are just floating through life when you're out on the road all the time? How do you get back?
Get grounded?
Yeah,
it's a great question. I've said many times to people that like traveling is just like doing drugs, a dopamine hit. You know, you go somewhere new, you're experiencing a new culture, all of this, you know, big rush of energy comes to you. And I think that you can bring that home with you. You often do. You know, we kind of just were talking about this idea of me being on this high wavelength and Bree being in this low wavelength. And I'm not going to lie, there were years of our life where it was very much like I'd come home and my feet would never really touch the ground. And I would be in some kind of chaotic, like jet lagged version of me where, as Bree mentioned, my body's there, my mind's somewhere else. And I think something that really helped me root back to where I was, again, Bree giving me space and time to assimilate back into the family, us having a proper debrief of what happened and when. That's not something that would happen the very moment that I would get home. It was something that we managed to find the time. And I think that what has been super helpful, we just kind of jumped off this topic, but is been helping empower Bree or watch Bree find her version of what that is, her version of what gets her excited, keeps her energized, keeps her moving forward, which is basically selfless service, work with equine therapy, not just the kids. Like, I think that sometimes the roles, like me as a photographer, this is just my role, my job. Her as a mom, and, you know, this is the role that consumes most of her life right now, soon to be another career and job she's working towards. So understanding that the moment that we were able to kind of meet each other, at least in the last like 2-3 years, these have been some of the best years of our life. Being able to like come home from a trip and all of a sudden I'm on this high and she's on this high because she just had this incredible training session where she's able to like come to me and be like, this, and then I'm like, this, and we're like, oh my gosh, I love you. And it's like, so it's like, oh my God, like this is what it was meant to be. And
it's almost as if her finding this has allowed you to really enjoy your work more.
Oh my gosh. 100%.
I would say 100%. You're absolutely right. This has been the biggest and mind blowing thing. And I think this is what I was pushing for a long time, but timing is everything.
Yeah, it wasn't the time then.
When the kids are little,
and I can't force it, you know? I mean, and that's...
So I think that when the kids were little and it was really, really hard, and you asked a question earlier we didn't answer, was faith is what kept...
I know, we jumped...
I know, faith is what kept us connected and Chris grounded. I would notice a difference if he had not been to church in a month and a half, 2 months, I feel like he noticed the same thing where he felt 100%. Disconnected from me, disconnected from the kids, disconnected from family, because oftentimes he's off working. And when we have that chance of a weekly meditation, going to church, partaking in sacrament, doing all these things that help ground us and keep us focused on the bigger eternal picture of life, it gives you perspective that you need in order to get through the craziness that is our mortal life.
Yeah. Would you say that your faith is central to your priorities and values?
Absolutely. Yeah, I think you can't have one without the other in the way that we live. But more so than that, it's almost like this has become one of the formulas for success we found is like not just within the sharing of, hey, what is your day like? What is this and that? But like, okay, cool. I'm going to call the kids to have prayer with them at night. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to like...
And they'll tell me. They'll be like, we can't say prayer yet because dad didn't call us. Like it's a very good grounding exercise for everybody.
Mm-hmm. And I think having the opportunity for Bree to hold me accountable to be like, hey, did you read your scriptures? And me being like, hey, did you read yours? And like, and we're like, hey, what'd you learn? You know, and we like text each other back or we'll call each other. That has been like, that sets us up for success when I come home. That keeps us connected.
You have a common... focal point that you can always go back to.
And I will say that the moral compass that our faith provides us helps me trust and feel comfortable with him traveling like he does, because we don't drink, we don't do drugs, and we're very committed to our marriage. And a lot of people wonder how that happens. How do you trust each other?
Yeah. How do you deal with jealousy?
Yeah.
Yeah. It has to still exist.
It does. It does totally. Still exist. And I look around and I see these opportunities that Chris has to go travel the world with other females. And it used to bother me a lot more, but we set a really good ground rule.
You're
rules.
More jealous of the males that I'm with.
That's right.
Mostly like professional athletes and models. So it's kind of.
Yeah. And so it's interesting because we set a ground rules that are what we're most comfortable with for each right. other, which is there really isn't a reason for you to be alone with the opposite sex for a while ever. Like there just yeah. isn't. Like,
why make the opportunity?
Why provide the space for there to be anything like that?
And or something misconstrued online. I mean, you have to keep in mind like being in the public eye and somewhat like the last thing I want is for the illusion of that or anything to come about.
Perceptions you know? To
yes.
go awry.
Right.
And so I feel like there's a mutual respect there. And if there is a trip that's coming up and there's going to be a lot of females there, we talk about it and it's open. And I've also had the opportunity to really become friends with a lot of the females.
I'd say,
that you
do you just
with.
Show up? Because I think showing up and reminding people that you exist is important.
You know what? And here's an interesting thing that I've heard before. It's like no one can steal someone from you if they don't want to be stolen.
That's a great
and
point.
So, so true. I had to sit back and say, like, I have to be confident enough in what I provide him in our relationship to know that nothing else is going to touch that.
Well, and also you're here loving what you're doing. I would imagine that you sometimes wonder if
100%. Are you kidding me? I'm jealous of Brie all the time.
No. Like,
yeah. Of course. I honestly
you
am
would be
like
dumb to not be
well,
worried.
Well, here's the thing is like what's more likely is like somebody who's at home more often, yes. like who has these like support groups and this and that. And I'm like, it's hard because I feel like I miss out on a lot of these mm-hmm. things and that is hard. And jealousy is a two-way street.
Two-way street. And there are times that I have.
And sorry, I'm totally going to cut you off,
go.
I want to say this really quick, but jealousy is not just about the other sex.
No, it's about
jobs.
Activity. Yeah.
Brie can be jealous of my job and absolutely. The time in my job. Yeah. I can be jealous of her spending time with horses. Yeah. And those arguments arise. Like, please keep in mind, like Brie's like, who do you love more? Who do you love? You know, and that's a jealousy thing. Like, yes. please don't think it's just all about
relationship.
The beautiful opposite sex that I'm traveling with or whatever, or that she's, you know, asking for help, you know, this and that. There's a reason why, you know, a lot of, you know, women will fall in love with their landscaper. It's because it's who's available.
Well, and I
making will... yourself available making myself available while I'm gone is crucial.
Like available to Brie, not to
yes,
other people.
Yes,
to be clear about
yeah,
that.
Yeah, we're not an open relationship. But I have to make myself available to Brie. I have to show up if I want to make sure that passion is there and that she still loves me.
And that was one of the questions that came up. People are wondering, how do you do this? Are you in an open relationship because you're both apart so much?
And it's unique in the way we lead our life, that's for sure. And I will say in complete honesty that I've said to Chris, and Chris has said to me at different times in our relationship, I'm feeling tempted. I'm feeling like mm-hmm. I'm looking in a way that I don't need to be looking at other
or
people.
I'm noticing things.
It surprises me that I'm looking.
Yes,
right?
and yeah. that's scaring me.
Yeah.
And I feel like people go so far down that road, afraid to be honest with their partner,
yes,
and afraid
they feel like that's already an indication that something bad has happened.
Yes, mm-hmm. and I think I've honestly said that to him before. Obviously, something's missing. If I'm feeling this way, so let's address it. Yeah. And that's where you take that brutal honesty and you do something with it.
I love that. I mean, I love that honesty, not that you're looking or
that you're a little bored.
Yeah. But that means the world to me. So I'm like, wow, you trust me enough to tell me this. And now it's my job to like either step it up or figure it out. And I would say that, you know, this kind of comes back to that idea of us, the way we communicate when we travel is that with you, but also with the kids. And this is one of my favorite things is like, if I come home from a trip and my family, my wife, my kids, Dad, where were you? I've already failed. Like, that's the first thing I noticed when I'm like, crap, I did not do a good job. Like, I need to be thinking of Brie, what she has going on throughout the day. Like, what her interests are. Like, oh my gosh, I'm in Iceland. I saw an Icelandic horse. Check this out. Like, we should ride here next time. I took this photo for you. I took a video.
Videos
look at
for
me.
The kids.
Yeah, videos for the kids. Like, Jeremiah loves geckos and lizards and I'm taking videos. Oh, look at this whale museum. We should go here. Oh, I got you like a pamphlet or a little something. I'm trying to infuse them into my life so that when I get home, they feel like there's a conversation already started right. and we can just pick that up. And it's like that has changed everything. And yes, for those asking out there, there are expeditions where I'm away from the phone for 8 days or mm-hmm. 10 days or I have no cell service.
Those are terrible.
I have prioritized yeah. the time to have a spot locator, to mm-hmm. send messages, to have a sat phone. These are costs. If you want to do what I'm doing or what Bree's doing and have a family, you need to be on top of that stuff. There are affordable options for people to have like a Bluetooth satellite texting service, this and that, to let people know you're okay and what you saw. And
that's just consideration.
That's just a part of, it's part of showing up.
Because if I go, if there's a time that he said, I'm going to call you by this day, and I said, okay, when do I worry?
Right. I always ask my husband that too.
Yeah, when do I worry?
And 10 days later.
And if it's an hour past the time, mm-hmm. I am worrying. There have been times where I have rallied the troops and like got in touch with all these people. And 9 times out of 10, the times that I'm worrying, I should have been worrying because there's something going on that is
because he's committed to checking
and that's not
and
planned
not being
for.
Such an egomaniac on my end to be like, why are you worrying? Like I've given Bree permission to worry.
Good.
And I realized that means she still loves me. That's what that means.
And that it's not just about the two of you. It's also about the life that you've built and your children. And one of the questions, mm-hmm. How do you maintain your authority as a father with your children when you're gone a lot? Do you just want to be the fun dad? Are you trying to just...
Disneyland syndrome?
Yes, exactly.
It's hilarious because there are the times...
What is that?
Well, there are the times where I'm like, I'm in a car with a bunch of people and like we're at a gas station. I have to step off and Bree's like, your son just did this and we're on FaceTime. And she's like, you need to talk to your son.
And I need backup.
And literally it's just me looking at him being like, what did you do? And like me saying, I'm really disappointed. I don't need to yell at my kid through the phone. I don't need to I can sometimes – what I'll do is I'll often shoot a video and be like, hey, I talked to one of my sons. I'll be like, hey, mom told me about this. I'm blah, blah, blah. I've had time to think about it.
And then they'll send a video back.
Yeah. And honestly, that's like
that's
really
cool. That's
real-time
parenting.
Mm-hmm. It really is. And Bree has facilitated that in a beautiful way. Mm-hmm. And it's a challenge. I mean, I understand that like everybody wants to do this differently and we're just sharing what's worked for us. But this has actually been a way that's been really helpful. We also kind of have this agreement, like you don't just buy your kids toys when you go places.
The Disneyland.
I don't like, and that's the thing is it'd be so easy for me to be like, dad's home. Guess what? Got you all this crap. Mm-hmm. And then Bree's like, cool. Like I've been having to like do some homeschool and force them to do this and yell at them every day about this. And she, that doesn't help her.
No.
You know.
But she's also, obviously, kept you in a position of authority. Like, clearly you keep telling the boys, dad is going to have something to say about this or what dad has to say is important. So you've kept him looped in to the parenting team.
And the hardest thing is when I come home and like, something – like, the other day, I came home and my son had taken scissors to our brand new TV. And
that's an interesting –
tried to cut
the
TV.
He wanted to cut – it was on. And he's like, I wanted to let the light out.
Okay.
And I'm like, I literally installed this new TV. It's like the crowning jewel.
We hadn't bought a new TV in 10 years.
Yeah. And it's like, okay, like I have to come home and be mad. That was the worst feeling in the world. But I think.
Because you had to walk in with the stern dad.
Yeah. I had to kind of walk in and be like, I'm disappointed. I'm not yelling at my kid, but I'm showing him disappointment. And honestly, I'm not disappointed. I had already gotten over it. Like 10 days earlier, I was fuming mad. But the reality is, I have to back Bree up, and that's important, right? Can't be Disneyland dad, can't be Disneyland
but
mom.
It's also like the emotional bank account. He has to provide them with positive interactions enough so that when he comes and has the stern position or strict
they'll
authoritarian,
listen. Yeah.
They'll listen and they'll respect and love what he says because they know that he loves them.
Yeah.
And that is something that's really accumulated in the last few years because they're able to really enjoy the same things together and have all that time together. And I've said this
it
before.
It gets easier, folks.
Yeah, I've said really that. I've said this before. Yeah. I love babies, don't get me wrong. And I loved my babies, but.
You're not missing that time.
That period was hard.
We
was
thrive
dark.
In this age range where we can have some independence of ourselves. So,
right.
And that's important too for couples to feel, give themselves grace that we all have periods of time that we do better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
their
absolutely.
Kids, and that's normal too.
I have a question for you both. I would love to know because this is something that has come up is like you're in the beginning of your career. You're trying to convince this significant other, whatever, relate mom, wife, you know, girlfriend, boyfriend, whatever, that this is what you want to do. How do you approach, how does that person sort of, how do you best communicate those things without letting them feel? Because here's the thing is like Bree watched my career start from like step one to step 100. Mm-hmm. But what if you're just like, hey, I want to do this for a living and
I got to take a leap of faith.
And I think understanding like how does that person communicate that to someone like yourself, you know? And I'm just sadly, all we have is two females here to ask this, but I'd love to know, like, how did it work for you?
Because we're at the retirement conversation. So you're at the start of
our
conversation. But you guys were married at 19.
We were together since we were 19. Okay. Yeah, I got married at 24.
But he traveled a lot early on. So
constantly.
Like, I would love to know, like, what was that in the – because you had mentioned –
it was horrible.
Yeah.
Well, that's why I think the three of us had this conversation because, yes, my husband was gone pretty much nonstop for a lot of our marriage, but especially those first 5 years. We had a new child as well.
Wow.
And I was every bit as immature as I could possibly be. I resented him being gone. I was angry all the time. But we didn't have – we couldn't talk either.
Right. No, this is way before.
So there was no texting or FaceTime. Mm-hmm. We talked once every few days. It was really hard. And a lot of couples that were in our same situation all divorced after this big long project.
Oh, my gosh.
We actually – our plan, our fix-it was we took leave of absence from life, basically, from work, and lived in our Volkswagen bus for 3 months traveling the country. And like you, after maybe 24 hours – in that bus, we realized, oh, this is all we care about. Mm-hmm. Everything else became noise. And so that
was – well, you'll either realize that or you'll be like,
I hate you.
I hate you.
And I'm stuck in this bus with you for 3 months. But for us, that was our turning point. That was our aha. And then we came back from that trip and just kind of got on solid ground.
And you're like, all we need to do is continue to get instill
back to
those
this.
Moments.
And we get then, back in the bus.
Yeah.
There was problems, we're like, we need to get in the bus.
No, that's beautiful.
But now here we are at this other end of it, and my husband's getting to retire, and now I find us in the same conversations. Like, can we afford this? Mm. This is another leap of faith. Mm-hmm. What are we going to live 10 more years, 20 more years? You know, what do we do with our time if you're not going to work every day? Do I get to see you 24/7? And he's like, well, maybe I want to go sailing. So interestingly, we're kind of almost having this –
revisiting the conversation
You mentioned a really funny thing there because, like, he's like, maybe I want to go sailing. And you're like, well, maybe I want to – spend more time on my podcast or it's like
we're back in this.
Well, all of a sudden you kind of – that's the hard thing is all of a sudden me and Bree join back together.
Yes.
And it's – she's like – and like, you know, I've woken up from like a 10-hour slumber because I was, you know, jet lagged, and she's like, I love you, bye. I'm like, where are you going? We're not gonna hang out. She's like no, I'm gonna go spend time with my horses. I'm like – and I have to understand, like, okay, well, that's awesome, because like I wanted her to do this. I'm respecting this is what you want to do. And guess what? I'm not the most important thing in your entire world, and your universe doesn't revolve around me. And rightly so. You need that time. And I think that's kind of I think that's maturity, is realizing that the time we do spend together, although it might be less than we did when we were like, you know, passionate 20-year-olds and like we would just, you know, talk on the phone for hours until we had nothing left to say. Is like, those are great periods.
Yes.
But now it's like those times we do spend together, we're like, we're talking about real things, and our relationship is deeper, and we do love each other, and we kind of get down to like the nitty gritty. And that to me is rad.
I think I love what both of you said. And I think the answer to the question of like, how do you support your partner if they want to go do something else? When fear is ruling your decisions and ruling your choices, mm-hmm. it's not coming from anywhere good. Right. And I think for me, the fear of what could happen that's wrong, but what could happen that's right. And nothing we ever do puts us into this place where we are so far gone that we can't pull ourselves back out. Mm-hmm. And we, Chris and I, both try to approach our lives with as little regrets as possible, in the sense that we're going to go out and we're going to try these things, and we might fail greatly at it, but at least we tried it. Yeah. And I think we all create these prisons in our own lives of limitations and reasons why we can't this and we shouldn't do that. And what would this do to our relationship? And I think over time, since we've been married a little while and we've known each other for so long, I have to have faith that through these dark periods or through these challenges, we will come back together and it will circle back around. Yeah. Life is cyclical.
Yeah.
But you also said the key thing is at the end of the day, you always like each other.
Yeah.
And I can say that about my husband as well, that for the times, no matter how angry or resentful or at the end of my rope was, I always like him as a human being.
Mm.
And
I love that.
Yeah. And so that has been that turning place. And also that you're modeling – for your kids the life that you want them to lead. And I, at some point, got mature enough to recognize that what Chris and I did, my husband's name is also Chris, but we did, not this Chris, on a day-to-day basis was setting a model that my girls would follow. And I became very conscious of wanting to make sure I was living a life I would be happy they chose to live.
Wow, that's really well said. Good. And I think that's what we hope our children recognize is like, this was and you can maybe speak to this, but like, this was a really good eye opener is that if every time I leave, I'm like, oh man, I'm so bummed. I'm going to miss you guys so much. Jeremiah, I love you. Like, I'm so sorry dad has to go to work. Yeah, I'd way rather be here. That's sending them the message that work is basically this terrible thing that takes dad away from the home. He hates it. He doesn't like it. So why would he do it?
Because Jeremiah actually did pick up on that. And he'd be like, dad doesn't like work.
Yeah.
Because he wanted Jeremiah to know that he's more important than his job.
Yeah.
But, and he misses him. Right. But by doing that to that extent,
it sends the opposite message. Yeah. Really,
our well-intended.
Yeah. Our well. And so I heard this piece of advice somewhere. It's like, no, like, your greatest goal should be that you inspire your children to find a career that they love as much as you do. And then they will realize, like, I'm like, hey, son, like, I'm so sorry I have to leave. I love you. I'm going to miss you. But dad's going on a really exciting trip. And guess what? This is going to be awesome. And I can't wait to share it with you when I get back. And changing that mindset has been really eye-opening. And
it's been a positive thing really for the boys. They look at it and they're like, ooh, that's fun. That's cool. It's not easy.
Dad's
they know it's
here. Yeah.
Really they know cool. It's hard. We keep it realistic, but it's a more enjoyable thing to talk about and it's inspiring for them and they're starting to grasp it, but it's not so out of this world unrealistic that they're like, dad's a superhero. It's like they see the realities of having to be gone, but know that it's worth it for dad to go. And that brings me back to why can I support him in this career and being gone for these jobs and these trips? It's because I believe in them too. Mm-hmm. And I believe in Chris too. And from day one, I knew what he was capable of.
Whether it was being a mechanic or an award-winning photographer.
And it makes me emotional, but I knew that whatever he was going to do, it was going to be amazing because he is amazing.
Yeah. But it's easy for you right now. You're so cute. But it's easy for me right now to say like, hey, if I'm like, hey, Brie, I've got to go on this big trip to Russia for 20 days. And you're like, okay, well, this is going to bring money back. This is going to be worthwhile.
Don't come back unless you bring money
back. Totally.
Make it worth it.
Yes, make it worth it.
And I think it needs to be said that like Brie and I are, I'm specifically very, very, I don't think I've traveled once in the last 10 years on like a personal trip to go somewhere that wasn't a job at all. I'm never like, I'm going to take a boys trip and go to Russia. You know, it's not like that. Like everything I travel for is work. If I want to go out and spend a weekend, I'll go to Utah or somewhere I can drive or spend time with my family. But I would just wonder from your perspective, like what if I was telling you that when we were 20 and I had this great opportunity? I mean, what were some of the struggles?
Calculated risks. Yeah. And that's what it comes down to for me, whether
and
it's
it was communication, right? We would talk through it at nauseam.
Whether it's monetary or whether it's practicality, calculated risks. If you wanted to take a risk that meant that we might be risking our income or whatever, then we have a plan B and a plan C always. And making sure that it's not going to be the make it or break it of our lives if you take this risk.
You're not risking the whole
kit and caboodle.
Every time.
Yeah.
Well, and I think something that maybe to my credit helped Brie understand that is like there were moments where we literally had a couple hundred dollars in the bank account or less. Absolutely. Like, that we please understand, like, we lived in a converted barn for a large period of time that dripped water and scorpions would end up inside or bugs or whatever. It was gnarly and it was also amazing. And that struggle, again, I've said, like, that struggle is what gave us this crazy rock foundation.
Well, and so many couples will say that the best times of their entire married life were when it was the worst.
In the van.
Those are the stories that
they are.
And that's why
you remember. I don't remember like the last like 5 years of like, yeah, we remodeled this. Like,
Great dinner you had at a fancy restaurant when everything fell apart.
I remember like
it.
The first time Brie made me like a dinner and like, or we fell asleep in the living room on our pull out couch watching like some stupid
24.
Show. Yeah. But what I wanted to say was like during those early times, I think that one thing that really helped Brie was realizing that if times got tough, I would find other work. Like
she knew you were going to
committed. Yeah, exactly. And it literally was digging a ditch because I would call my dad and he's a landscaper again. And I'd be like, hey, do you need help for a week? Mm-hmm. And I was like, there was no shame. There was no like, no, I'm an adventure photographer, Bree, and this is what I want to do. When a big opportunity would come up and we would both be on board, I would go. But also I would go shoot a wedding and I would go shoot senior mm-hmm. pictures and I would do everything I could. And Bree was working at the same time and I was pulling my weight. And yes, I was putting time and effort and energy into doing jobs that made very, very little money or almost none whatsoever in the beginning to make my name. But that commitment to not only my career and to her was there. And I think that was maybe, if I'm speaking for you too, was that like a telltale sign that you
Yeah,
like,
I always trusted that he was going to take care of me and that I was going to take care of me because I was bringing in income at the time too, even though it wasn't as substantial, that we were in a partnership and we were going to make it work. And at the very least, we could go back and live in that barn and it would be fine. And I think maybe that's why also we continue to go on a whim with the kids and go like sleep in our van somewhere else for a few nights because
one, it's funny because we almost are trying to get back to that now.
Yes.
Like I'm sure at a certain point when your husband kind of hit like critical mass in terms of success, we
always go back to the van.
Yeah,
to this day.
Yeah, and it's rad because for me, I'm just like, hey, like, yeah, we can afford to go do this, but we're not going to because this is not what I want my kids' experience to be.
And it gets us back to what's important, and it's each other, and it's the time that we spend together, and it's messy, and it's not great, and we're yelling at our kids a lot, and they're testing our patience.
Tell the truth. Exactly.
Yes, and we're arguing probably for the first few hours on every trip because there's a lot of stress to get
always.
Us there.
Yes.
Always.
But then once we get that out of the way, because like I said, we fight hard, we love hard, then the love comes in and we really do make the memories that we both look back on and cherish more than anything.
My guests are Chris and Brianne Burkhart, and we've been talking about their life as a family and as individuals and parents. And I know that there are a large group of questions. I think we touched on
a lot of them.
A lot of the topics. Is it just a couple last questions that I wanted to put
out? We'll try to rapid fire too. I know we can have a tendency to speak for a long time.
I know. So. We'll do a few, but here's one. How did you keep from becoming an arrogant ass?
I am an arrogant ass.
Okay, thank you. Yeah. Next question.
I mean, really? You think so?
That's a reality. No, I just think that I think that there's and I'll
you
just
can be. We all
you have
can be.
To have.
Well, no,
I guess what I was going to say, to be who you
no,
are.
No, you have to.
Okay, thank you.
You have to. Here's the thing.
You have to have some confidence.
Well, we've talked about this.
Yes, we have.
You step on the TED stage to speak and you're in front of Bill Gates and whatever, all these bigwigs or whatever, like – there is a part of you that has to believe that you are worthy of being there.
I would agree.
And that does require some – you could use the word pride or ego in lieu of arrogance. But I think that the reality is it does require a little bit of that. It does require a little bit of like, okay, this is me. I mean the reality is like the best preparation for a TED Talk video tells you to go stand in front of a mirror, make yourself big and occupy space and bring in this, you know, whatever energy you want to bring. And I think that you have to not only do that, but believe it. But the important thing is that, yes, if you want to, you know, put your thumb in your mouth and inflate yourself for a second, great. But the moment you step off that stage, deflate. And that's important. And I think that that has required me to, in some ways, just be able to kind of, or be forced to, and I know my wife wants to say something about this, but be forced to kind of look at certain situations and believe in myself. And I equate that to like a little bit of pride and ego. I think when it comes to the ass side of things, the one thing I would say is that I have to be extremely critical of where I spend my time. Mm-hmm. And I think sometimes it makes me feel like an asshole because I have to basically say, oh man, like I have only so many hours in a day. My kids get some of those hours. I get some of those hours. My wife gets some of those hours. And I don't have time for these people or these things. And that can make me feel really bad. And I'm a highly emotional person that wants to please everybody. And when you feel like you've let someone down, you feel like an asshole. And that's just
how you have to
I
be
feel.
Discerning, right? You have to be discerning in how you give of your energy. Because I think when you're in the public eye at the level that you are, everyone's drawing on it all the time. And I think that can be dangerous. And so I think part of the arrogance is the shield to protect what inside of you is to be a pleaser.
Is very much putting underneath.
Pudding.
Very
mean.
Soft. Yeah.
Pudding as in the food.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Thank yeah,
you.
No, I'm just saying like,
no,
yeah,
like it's you, mushy
the
inside.
Soft underbelly.
Shield,
you gotta have the shield. Yes, I
yeah,
get
no,
that.
No, yeah. Like, I mean, I will self-profess very sensitive person, and Bree is honestly a way more mentally stable and understanding person than I am. Like, it's a dream to have someone like that by my side to help me wield my way through challenging situations.
But it seems to me at 33, almost 34, you have grown into that place. That it almost like well, the gift you give to your.
You're absolutely right. But I would say that I think the memoir I'm coming out with mm-hmm. that Bree has so kindly helped.
I know
infinitely
we need to talk about that too. Yeah.
That's coming out in 2000. This year, sorry, 2020 in fall.
Let's caveat memoir. We know you're not 80.
Yeah,
it's
a period of time that basically discusses an important. Learning period of my life, which is the last decade.
How do you keep him from blowing up?
The arrogant ass part, yes. Yeah. It's interesting because sometimes he can come back home from being gone for a while or doing a tour and puts on that dictatorship role of like, I run this as a well-oiled machine because that's how he has to survive on the road. Mm-hmm. And so coming home, I have to pop the bubble a little bit and be like, okay, no, let's come back down to earth. But it's funny to think that like, anyone could see him as, you know, a boastful, prideful person because I see so much of who he is and it is that sensitive part. And I feel like shifting the terminology makes more sense for me that okay. him not being arrogant, he's empowered. And
I like that,
that is something that I really feel when I see him step on a stage. There's a humility and an honesty and he knows that he isn't anything special and he just gets to have this awesome experience to share his experience in life with people. And he comes from a very humble place. And I think that's why it resonates with people. And I think if anyone has, you know, everyone has a perception of who you are, even people that have worked for you or been around you on the fringe in circles, and they can have a basic understanding of who they think Chris Burkhardt is, but it's just the side that he's let you see. And I get to see all sides. Most of them maybe. And I feel so honored to be able to like see all those sides because he is such a complex and beautiful person. And I think that is the gift of when he starts to unravel and unveil himself to the world, he shares a real true part of himself. And that's kind of why I feel so excited about that book too.
Thanks, babe. Me too. It's a big part of the story is about you. And about all of that. So I'm hoping you're grateful for the book's coming out. It really pulls open some pretty like deep wounds and stuff and is a very honest portrayal. I think it's the, you know, I would say that more than any photography book or award or accolade, that's the thing that I'm going to be the most proud of to have in the world and share with my kids at some point.
I want to thank you both for coming in today and opening yourselves up and being so honest and being willing to talk about this. I have a feeling we could do this again in a year
part,
or two,
part two
after the book comes out. And because there's a lot of things to talk about. I think a lot of people are struggling with the same questions and the same issues. And that the more we talk about it and normalize what goes on, I think the more helpful it is. So I want to thank you both. Chris
thank
and Brianne
you.
Burkhardt have been my guests today. You've been listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. This is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. Find my show at kcbx.org or podcast my show at however you podcast. Look for A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. Hit subscribe and the show will come up to listen at your convenience. As always, I appreciate having the opportunity to share these stories. I look forward to talking to all of you again soon. Thank you for supporting Public Radio KCBX.
Thank you.
I walk halfway around the world just to sit down by your side. 'Cause I wouldn't do most anything, girl, to be the apple of your eye. Troubles, they may come and go, but good times, there's the gold. So if the road gets rocky, girl, just steady as we go. Any place you wanna go, you know I'll be next to you. And if it's treasure, baby, you're looking for, I'll search the whole through. Troubles, they may come and go, but good times, they're the gold.
So if the road gets rocky, girl, just steady as we go. When the storm comes up, but you know exactly what I mean. And in the darkest hours, you shine on me. You set me free. And keep me steady as we go. So if your heart rings dry, my love, I will fill your cup. And if your load gets heavy, girl, then I will lift you up. Troubles, they may come and go, but good times, they're gold. So if the road gets rocky, girl, just steady as we go.